Hey everyone, this is Craig Valentine from Internet Independence, and I'm here with my good friend, Bedros Koulian, who is going to help me talk about the universal truths of successful people. So Bedros, welcome to the call.
Hey, thanks for having me, Craig.
Well, I'm really happy to have you here, and you know, I've known Bedros for a long time. I originally got coaching from him, and then I went and did some products with him, did some seminars with him, and now we run a coaching group ourselves, and I'm going to have him speak at one of my events for Turbulence Training Trainers very soon. So, Bedros, you have got some very interesting articles that I've read. I read a portion of one of your 45 success tips every day, so I just wanted to let you know that, and that's why I invited you on this call. That's why I invited you on this call to talk about common truths about successful people, because you study a lot of people, you have access to a lot of successful people, and like I said, you've written a lot on success traits. So let's go through them. I think you might have, what, 10?
Yeah, I've got about 10 or 12, a couple bonus ones for you that I just penned down myself a few minutes ago, so we'll go through those.
Awesome. All right, well, let's start with number one.
Well, one thing I've noticed, and again, this is from, thankfully, from the experience I've had with many successful people, and I'll tell you the first person that comes to mind who lives this particular success truth is Joe Polish. And the success truth is being a value adder and I guess we can combine one and two together, and a connector of people. So really, the most successful people I've seen have those two commonalities. Is that, one, they're connectors. In other words, Joe Polish, when I was making a documentary film about internet marketing, helped connect us to more internet marketers and direct response marketers than any one single person, or in fact, than all the other people in the film combined. And it almost seemed like every time he'd call someone, and many of the times I was standing right next to Joe Polish, when he'd call Frank Kern, when he'd call Eben Pagan, he'd call all these people, it's almost like they're on a brief, familiar friendship basis with him. It wasn't a professional thing. That you can tell that everybody truly connected with Joe as, like, gosh, they're good, awesome friends, and it almost seemed like everybody owed one to Joe. And, of course, a lot of these people were like, of course we'll do an interview, Joe. You say these guys are great guys, we'll do an interview for the movie. So through getting coaching from Joe and then later on working with Frank Kern and some other big names in the industry, I found that the best, most successful people and those who live the most abundant lives truly add not only value to people's lives by way of content, of knowledge, of information, but also are the greatest connectors. And when you connect people to others, like and you, Craig, being one of them, I mean, gosh, you've connected me to so many people that I down the line ended up doing business with or just had a platonic friendship relationship with. That's, I almost feel like, gosh, I owe Craig one. I owe Craig two. And it's a great feeling because I know I can turn to you and say, hey, Craig, I'm thinking of doing this one thing. And it's almost a given that you'll say, well, I know this one guy or gal who can help you. And that really is a true component of a successful mindset person.
Well, I appreciate that. And, the reason why I'd like to do that is because there's so much negativity out there. And there's so many positive people, there's so many people that want to be positive and connect with other positive people, but I know when I mention that kind of stuff on Facebook, people are always, they're so hesitant to try and free themselves from the negative people and look for the positive people because they don't believe that they're out there. And so anytime that I can connect, one positive person to another, it really is important to me.
Yeah, I agree. And what's funny is I think I heard Dan Sullivan say this. He says success comes from two things, and obviously I believe it comes from 10 or 12 things, but if you really drill it down to these two things, he says success comes from two things, the thoughts that occupy your mind and the people that you surround yourself with. And really that's exactly what it is. So many people believe that there's not enough successful people who would want to come into their life. Why would someone want to come into my life and add value to my life? What have I done to deserve that? And so when they think that way and the thought patterns in their head run that way, that negative, and they're in that negative self-talk state, they're not in a position to then add value to other people's lives. Therefore, they're not in a position to then connect other people of high influence. And so it's this vicious cycle of you know, negativity, self-sabotage, and failure, when really if you can just manage the thoughts that occupy your mind and surround yourself with people who aren't, you know, vampires and crabs, and that's actually one of the things I had written down here, one of the points is you've got to eliminate and cut the crabs of your life. And I'll give you a short story where I kind of came up with that line, cutting the crabs out of your life, and it's not quite what everybody on the call probably thinks when I say crabs. I was visiting Ketchikan, Alaska, several years ago with my wife, and we were walking along the boardwalk, and we saw a gentleman with a five-gallon bucket fishing for crabs. And he had about 8 or 10 crabs in that bucket, and he had the bottom of that bucket filled with water. And as we were walking by, I noticed one of these ambitious crabs was crawling on top of all the others. And as we're standing there watching, this ambitious crab kind of was reaching for the rim of the bucket and was attempting to pull himself out. And so, being the good Samaritan that I am, I said, "Hey, sir, I think you're about to lose a crab here. He's going to make a getaway." And he said, "Well, actually, just watch what happens." And so as I sat there to watch, this ambitious crab, Craig, is pulling himself up, and about 3 or 5 other crabs from the bottom reached up, grabbed it by the hind legs, and pulled it right down. And he said, "See that?" He goes, "These crabs are self-policing. It's just a built-in thing about crabs that it's like, hey, if I'm stuck in a bucket, you're going to be stuck in a bucket with me." So there was no need to have a lid on that bucket because they naturally pull each other down. Now, to me, that was the most, like, aha moment ever, because I realized, holy crap, we all have crabs in our lives. We all have people in our lives who, as we try and become ambitious, as we try and reach for the stars, reach for those dreams that we conjure up in our minds, there's those people around us, and oftentimes it's the people who surround us most frequently, friends, family, coworkers, that are the crabs in our lives. And, you know, gosh, it's a scary thought to say you've got to eliminate them or at least reduce the exposure to them, but that's really what you have to do. And I've had to do that with friends, dear friends from high school I've had to do that with, because their mindset was of negativity, of scarcity, of greed, and of self-sabotage. And every time I share an idea that, hey, I want to create this software for personal trainers, hey, I want to create this one technology, hey, I want to make this documentary film, it's like, oh, you can't do that. Do you know how much money that costs? Or what do you know about software technology? What do you know about making a documentary film? And ironically, I was able to do all of that successfully. But I first had to start with eliminating those crabs or those energy vampires out of my life.
Cool. So was that principle number 3, or are we still just hitting principle number 3?
Yeah, that's I would say that's principle number 3. And I've got them kind of renumbered based on what we talked about. But if we went on to principle number 4, and this is really critical, and that's to relentlessly manage your time and energy. And more than ever today, man, I've got to tell you, there's so much garbage from, you know, Facebook to Twitter to YouTube to all the media exposure that you get, to people calling you, asking you to pitch their product, to sell this to your friends and family if it's a multi-level marketing thing, to try out this next new shiny object, that if you don't relentlessly manage your time, others will manage it for you. And so you've got to be able to manage your time and energy and learn the art of saying no more often. Because more often than not, most people that approach you, and I hate to say it this way, are there to value extract. And that's actually, I believe, a primitive component in us, right? It's survival, right? And so, like, when you think about the caveman era, well, you know, the cavemen weren't walking around saying, "Hey, here's a piece of my brontosaurus for you." They would, you know, they would try and stockpile as much of meat and fruits and vegetable twigs and berries as they can, because for the next famine that was going to happen. So we've got this built-in component to value extract. However, that served us well back in those days. Today, truly successful people of abundance and of the mindset of, gosh, there's more to go around than ever before, are not value extractors. They're actually value adders. They're value creators. And so when you think about it, if you're not relentlessly managing your time and energy, people are always trying to suck at you, suck your energy, suck your time, get you to do something for them, get you to click on this link, get you to click on that button, watch this video, and before you know it, you've gone down this rabbit hole where you feel like you're doing things that are productive towards becoming successful, but at the end of the day, you've really done nothing to serve your business or your desired lifestyle. You've just kind of let others manage your time and energy, and that's just a horrible way to go about it.
Do you have a quick tip on, you know, just getting something done, you know, getting one big thing done? How do you do it in your day? I don't want to go down too far into time management, but I know you're a very productive person, and so what is it that allows you to get so much done?
Yeah, the easiest thing for me, man, and it's funny, while I'm all about technology and I've got software and et cetera for the market that I serve, it's still the old spiral notebook. I've got a spiral notebook that a steno pad, actually is what it is, that I keep with me everywhere I go in my backpack, and all day long I'm writing down the things that I have to do tomorrow. So I just make a list. I love working off lists because I like being rewarded. Like, who doesn't like a reward system? Ever since we were kids, mom and pop would say, hey, eat everything on your plate and you get dessert, right? So if you check everything off your plate, you get X. And so I found, and of course the most successful people that I've surrounded myself found, that when you work off lists, you become most productive. Now, here's what I do. I'll write down everything I need to do tomorrow. And at the end of the night, before I go to bed, typically right after dinner when I'm hanging out with my kids, put the kids to bed. And what I'll do is I'll just take out my steno pad and I'll just number the things that I have to do tomorrow morning when my feet hit the floor by number of importance. Now, the best thing to do is put number one next to the hardest thing on that list, because the hardest thing on that list is probably going to be the thing that's going to deter you from doing the rest of it. Because if you put that last, you're never going to want to get to it, so you're going to intentionally find reasons not to do number one, two, three, four, five, just because you don't want to get to number six because it's the hardest thing. But if you just do number six first, do the hardest thing first, you can plow through your list, and there's nothing better than, like for me, even a day like today. In fact, right now it's 2:30. We scheduled our call for 2:15 because I was able to cross everything off my list by 2 o'clock this afternoon, took a little 15-minute break, and then here we are talking. And after we're done with this call, I'm done for the day. I can go hang with my family and, in fact, take my kids out to go watch Cars 2, which is really neat for me. That's how I like to pass my time. But if you don't have a list to work off of, man, I've got to tell you, that's – you're going to just completely mismanage your time, your energy, and your efforts. And, in fact, on that topic, a lot of people, what they put on their list is just garbage. And that's going back to my whole 5-95 rule. There's only about 5% of the things you do in life or in your business that would truly make it successful. Now, for me, I know for my business, it's pretty much to delegate, motivate, and sell. So I delegate to my staff. 95% of the things that need to be done, I have DVDs and books and so on that people buy from me. My staff is kind enough, nice enough to package it up and send it out through UPS. Customer support, I don't take care of it. My staff does, right? When new clients come on board, the onboarding process, my staff does. So my job is to delegate 95% of those things to them and, of course, to motivate my staff by way of pay, by way of, you know, being good to them, right? And, of course, to motivate the people I work with, my joint venture partners, my business partners, such as you, Steve Hockman, et cetera, to say, keep you guys motivated and excited to work with me, have a good relationship with you. And finally, to sell, which means I need to be a good salesperson and a great marketer. So I know as long as I'm doing delegate, motivate, sell, that's my 5%. Now, that may include writing email sales copy, a blog post, creating a sales video, a content video, making a phone call to talk to a potential joint venture or affiliate partner. It's all under that umbrella. But I'm so good at my 5% that my 4 to 6 to 8 hours a day I spend on my 5%, and the other 95% is outsourced. And people will say, gosh, you know, you get so much done. You're so productive. That's because I don't do the trivial stuff, the trivial to me. I do my critical 5, and everybody else will do the trivial 95.
Awesome. So has that covered another one of our success truths there?
Yeah, it sure has. I think I've completely deviated from our bullet points here, as is the way I do things.
Was that a new one? Yeah. Was that a new success? That was just time management, right? And time management and delegation how to run things.
It really is, exactly. It really is under time management and saving energy. But, Gosh, you know, it's like, you ask people, you know, because you and I have coaching clients, and we'll ask them, like, hey, man, you know, hey, where's that squeeze page that you were supposed to do? Well, I'm still working on that squeeze page. Why not go to Elance.com, put a bid out for that squeeze page, and have somebody on Elance.com or rentdakota.com knock out that squeeze page for you. Outsource that, delegate that to somebody else, and focus on creating a relationship with an affiliate instead. So, yeah, time management and energy management has everything to do with doing your 5%, or at least understanding what your 5% is and realizing what the 95% to outsource should be, which kind of brings us to the next point. You know, if you're doing 100% of everything, you're never going to be able to do this next point, which I believe is the point number 5 or 6, which is to bring the energy. And this, to me, is really one of the core fundamental components that every successful entrepreneur or just successful person in general has, is they bring the energy. They're positive. They're enthusiastic about life. When you talk to them, you have this attraction towards them versus we've all been around those people who are just kind of negative. They have this negative aura or energy about them that after you spend about an hour or two with them, you literally walk away feeling physically drained and exhausted, emotionally and mentally drained and wrung out. And those are people you don't want to be around. Those are people you don't want to do business with. Those are people that you won't buy from. On the flip side, you look at all of the most successful people, and it doesn't matter if it's success in music and media and business and life and philanthropy, they bring the energy. They're passionate about what they do. They realize that what they're doing is their purpose in life, and they attack it like hell or high water. This will get done. And when you see people that way, you begin to align yourself with them. You begin to buy into their message. And if you can't bring the energy, if you can't be optimistic, positive, portray hope to the market, to the space that you're speaking to, no one's going to want to do business with you. No one's going to want to be around you. And there's no way you can bring the energy if you're doing 100% of the stuff 100% of the time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, just people listening to this call are going to get a great example of how to bring the energy, because you certainly have on this call, and I really appreciate it. And that's why, you know, that's why people are attracted to hanging around you and attracted into your life, because you, again, you bring that energy, you have that mission, you have that motivation and that guidance and that vision. So very cool. So we've covered bringing the energy. We've covered value adders, connectors, relentless management of your time and energy. We've covered eliminating the negativity, right?
Yep.
And so burning desire to succeed, is that our next one?
Let's talk about that. Yeah, the burning desire to succeed. And this is so important, dude. It's, you know, the whole Yoda thing. I know everyone's heard it enough. It's like, hey, there is no try. There's only do. And that's so true, right? And it, when you're talking about wanting something, if you don't want something to the point where you have this core burning desire inside you that, like, hell or high water, I'm going to get that. It'll get done. And I don't even know how, but I will get that. If you don't have that level of burning desire, you might as well find something else that you're passionate about, because you're guaranteed to fall on your ass. You're guaranteed to encounter an obstacle. You're guaranteed to have a roadblock. You're guaranteed that it's going to cost you more than you thought. And unless you have that burning desire inside you to overcome all of those obstacles, the very first time that you hit one of those obstacles, you'll just quit. And I've seen so many people do that. On the flip side, you look at guys like, gosh, I was just listening to Tony Hsieh's book, you know, the Zappos guy, Zappos.com, Delivering Happiness. And when you hear how many times Zappos.com should have gone bankrupt, one of the times, dude, I don't know if you've read this book, but one of the times they literally went out to Chevy's because they couldn't get funded, so they went out to Chevy's. It's a Mexican restaurant throughout California out here. And they just said, hey, guys, let's go out to Chevy's, drink some margaritas, go back to the office, clean out our desks, and we're done. That's it. That's it. We are done. We are no longer Zappos. We're no longer on the Internet. We're no longer in business because they didn't get funded. Well, lo and behold, as they're having their drinks, you know, one of them comes up with another idea of finding funding just to give them 28 more days of breath. And so it was like, you know, okay, now we've got enough funding for 28 more days. What do we do now? Okay, now we've got enough funding for another 3 months. What do we do next? To hear how many times Zappos should have gone bankrupt. Ironically enough, they are now owned. They just sold to Amazon.com for, I think, I don't know, like $2 billion, $12 billion. It was definitely a B, billion with a B, and not million with a M that they sold for. And it's simply because Tony Hsieh and the management team at Zappos had this burning desire to succeed, even when all chips were down.
Yeah, that's a fantastic book, and Tony has run a fantastic company, and there's so much to learn from Zappos, which is a really good segue into the next point, which we had written down here, which is caring deeply.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, I did a blog post just the other day, and I guess another way to say caring deeply is what I did on the blog post, was just to truly give a shit, you know, to really care about people, care deeply, because ultimately, again, we're attracted to people who care for us, and we repel people who obviously are value extractors or don't care for us, right? And so we all have this, you know, we call that sixth sense of, like, hey, did you get that vibe off that person? You know, they kind of have that weird vibe. Yeah, whether it's a good vibe or a bad vibe. Well, we can tell when people care deeply for us, whether they're value adders or they just seem to be value adders in life. And if you care deeply, then you're going to reap what you sow. And that's kind of like the whole, you know, the law of attraction, right? The law of the universe. You can't go around expecting everybody to do things for you, taking shortcuts, shortchanging people, selling, and since we're talking about information products, selling information products that are shallow and have no depth, and then expect to have the universe to reciprocate and give you a good, abundant life. That's not going to happen. But if you care deeply, if you over-deliver, and again, using the example of Zappos, every time I bought shoes from them, and God knows I buy a ton of shoes from them, I get that email from them the next day that says, hey, Bedros, guess what? We've upgraded you to expedited shipping, so you're going to get your shoes tomorrow. Now, I know that's part of their business model. I know now that when I order shoes from Zappos, I'll get that email, and then I'm upgraded. But even then, I'm still excited because guess what? They've exceeded my expectation. They've proven to me that they care deeply about the money that I spend with them. They care deeply about me. They value the money I spend with them. They take better care of me than I would get taken care of if I went to the mall to buy shoes from the 17-year-old kid who can care less about getting me the right size, right color, right design. And so I'll continue to buy from them. So when you care deeply, it transcends so many different things. It tells people such a deep message that, oh, my gosh, you want to do business with them, and you want to refer other people to do business with them. So when you care about your customers or the people you work with, your JV partners, et cetera, you're not just sending them a message. You're actually increasing your circle of influence because they are going to tell others to work with you. Just like you've done that with me and I've done that with you, we've connected each other to people. I've had literally personal trainers refer me to other personal trainers. Sometimes, oftentimes, they're competitors, which you would never think would happen. But I care so much about my customers and clients, and I always attempt to over-deliver, that you know, it's like that ripple that just continues, and it's such a really cool thing. So you've got to care deeply. One thing I got from Joe Polish, totally out of the blue, was a flip cam. I'm part of his Genius Network Mastermind Group, was this flip cam with Genius Network Mastermind Group. Now, I use a flip cam often when I travel, just to flip cam things and stuff and put up on my blog. I happen to use that flip cam because it just happens to be the most recent one that was sent to me from Joe. My older one is not high definition, and so he sent me a high definition one, and I use that. And every time I see that, I think about, like, gosh, Joe did not have to do that. He exceeds my expectations already at those masterminds that I'm in with him. He gives me the knowledge and the content and the information that I need. However, by going one further and sending me the flip cam, a few months after that, he sent us like a tin of cookies. It's an obvious sign that the guy cares deeply about his clients. He sends me text messages and says, hey, Bedros, you ought to talk to Brandon Bouchard about something because I know you're starting Fit Body Bootcamp, and Brandon Bouchard just wrote a book, and you might want to consider writing a book about, you know, the entrepreneurship side of starting a fitness business, and Brandon Bouchard might be able to get that off the ground for you. Like, what an amazing connector. The guy, out of the blue, cares enough for me, a coaching client and a friend now, where he would think of me and connect me with Brandon Bouchard, which really was an awesome connection to make. And I would have never done that on my own, or in fact, wouldn't have thought of it on my own. So caring deeply is very, very critical, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've, you know, met with Joe the other week when he was here in Toronto, and he was discussing the dilemma he has that he gets so many emails because he's connected to so many people. And he said he probably gets 30 emails in a half an hour. So he's getting an email a minute all day long from all the people that he knows. And that's just, you know, again, another good reflection of how he is such a value adder and connector. And so you've really in here, and you mentioned this a little bit before, but, you know, caring deeply and the burning desire to succeed and the relentless management of your time and energy, it's all made possible by having a mission and a vision, which is your next point. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, this is critical. And again, we talk about all those obstacles and those challenges that are going to come up anytime you start a business. And going back to Tony Hsieh's business, Zappos, you know, when they started doing mail order shoes, this is literally what they did. One of the guys went to a local shoe store, took pictures of all the shoes. They put them up on their website. When an order came in, if Craig Ballantyne went to Zappos.com back in the day and you bought a pair of shoes, then they would run to the shoe store, a retail shop across the street, buy it, and send you the shoes. And they'd be lucky if they broke even on that. But that's how the whole concept started, because they were hoping that what would happen is they could just have the manufacturers like Adidas, Puma, Nike, Reebok, drop ship shoes for them so that they don't have to hold inventory. So they go to this big shoe convention in Las Vegas. They talk to over 90 different brands. And of the 90 different brands they talked to, and they were certain that majority would agree to doing drop shipping for them. In fact, only three agreed to do drop shipping for them. So talk about having an obstacle. The whole business model was for us to not have a warehouse. And all of a sudden, they now realize, like, holy crap, we need to have a warehouse, and we need to buy the shoes from the manufacturer. We need to house enough shoes so that when the order comes through, we can send it out that day if the order comes through before 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, they didn't anticipate that in their business model. That alone was a reason for them to go out of business. But because they were so driven, they were so passion-oriented, and because they had a mission and a vision of what they wanted their shoe business online to be like, because at the time, only 5% of the shoes that were being sold through catalogs. And they knew with the internet up and coming so quickly that 5% meant something like, that's 5% of something like $44 billion a year. Like, I don't even know this, but then $44 billion a year or $1 million, whatever it was, is some ridiculous number, is spent each year on shoes. And so 5% of that was being done through catalogs. Well, you know, 10 years ago, you look at the internet and you know that what it's going to turn out to be, and these guys did. And so they're like, holy crap, we're just going to have these guys drop ship shoes for us, and we're just going to be selling shoes all day long. The very best, what we need to do is do search engine optimization, make sure people find us online when they're looking for shoes, and that's that. But all of a sudden, lo and behold, they've got the biggest problem of all. They need to have a giant warehouse and a whole shipping distribution center process that they never anticipated and they never budgeted for. Another reason for them to go out of business. But since the mission and the vision of their business was to crush the catalog sales and to move not only 5% of the sales, you know, that were happening outside of the stores, but then to start taking ownership of like 20-25% of sales happening online. That was their mission. That was their vision, and everybody stood behind it. They were able to accomplish that and sell their business to Amazon for a ridiculous amount. Now, if you don't have that mission and vision, you're a rudderless ship. Soon as someone says, hey, you know what, have you considered running your business this way? You're going to turn that way. Have you considered running your business that way? You're going to turn that way. You're going to see a shiny object and run towards it. And at the end of 12 months or 24 months, you look back and you haven't made much progress. The reason is you have no mission and vision to align yourself with. I was that way when I first created High Tech Trainer, my very first piece of software for personal trainers. And in fact, Craig, we were so, I guess I didn't even know this, but I was so anti-vision that our little motto was, we're a yes company. In other words, you tell us, hey, Bedros, does your software do this? I would say yes, and I would have our software programmers do it. Hey, Bedros, can your software do this? Yes, and have our software programmers do it. Before we knew it, we were doing health club management, personal training studio management. We were doing workouts on PDAs, those little Palm Pilots. We were doing online workouts for trainers because we said yes to everything. And once I realized that I need to create a vision for what High Tech Trainer needs to be, and my mission has to be that I want 1,000 fitness professionals to use High Tech Trainer to deliver workouts for their clients, and that's it. That's my mission, 1,000 people by whatever date. Holy crap. I started saying no more often. I said, no, my software does not do that. However, I bet this software will do that for you, but if you want a software that creates workouts and tracks workouts and allows you to accept payments, you ought to consider using my stuff. And High Tech Trainer grew quickly, just incredibly quick, the minute I understood the concept of mission and vision and stopped saying yes to everything that came my way.
Very cool. Now, I guess that was kind of a learning moment, so let's talk about the next one. Never stop learning, and then we'll finish off with the gratitude and attitude one and the bonus ones after that. But, you know, never stop learning is something that, you know, no business is ever perfect, but no business is ever done, and you just want to keep on going and building on a new mission and vision. Once you hit one, you want to hit the next one.
That's exactly right, man. I mean, you know, the minute you stop learning, you stop being a visionary. And if you plan on being successful, whatever niche or demographic you're serving, you have to be in the cutting edge. You know, you can't be running a technology business on old Microsoft Windows 95. It's just not going to work. You know, you've got to be on the most cutting edge software technology, computer systems there is. So you've got to start always or continue to always update your knowledge base. Information today is more accessible than ever before. The problem is people feel that it's gotten me this far, I'm happy, and they rest on their laurels, and before you know it, somebody finds a better way to manufacture what you're manufacturing for a cheaper cost, for better quality, and they beat you, and it's simply because you stopped learning. A great experience for me was that years ago, my very first online business was selling supplements out of my bedroom. I wanted to be an online supplement retailer, so I was selling creatine, protein, muscle volumizers, etc., through my two-bedroom apartment. So one of the bedrooms I had stocked up with supplements. Well, at the time, a lot of online retailers, and this was like 1998, 99, a lot of online retailers were still doing that model that I was running, which was storing supplements on location, housing it, having overhead, and then when an order came through, they would send it out. Now, I did not have a team. I did not have a resource. I hired some company to create a website for me and to create a shopping cart, and that was that. I didn't have a team or a knowledge base to lean on or to reach out to. And so as the internet evolved and supplement companies started to drop ship for retailers, I still kept buying from them and housing it. So while my competitors were running like, you know, they were pretty much just selling stuff and then having the company who manufactures it drop ship it to you, there I was buying 20, 30 bottles of protein at a time so I can get the discount rate so that I can send you one bottle at a time as you need it, which was ridiculous. I failed to evolve. I failed to learn that the internet was changing and evolving. And because of that, that business of mine failed. Later on, today, in fact, in life, I'm always on the cutting edge. I will spend as much money, time, and energy as I need to get the information from the horse's mouth. If I know that you're out there in Toronto doing something that's so cutting edge and I get wind of it, I would do whatever it takes to get on a plane, to pay you whatever I need to pay you, to sit with you, to extract that information, and then to bring it back, to teach my staff the new way of doing business. Because the minute I don't do that, I fail. And by the way, if you stop learning, you not only fail in business, but you're doing your customers and your employees and the people you do business with a disservice. You essentially, voluntarily, stop caring deeply, which was one of the elements of successful people. So you've got to continue to learn. Otherwise, you stop caring, you stop being a value adder, and you pretty much perish.
Very true. All right, well, let's move into something that a lot of people might think is, you know, something they don't need to do because it's not, you know, a real strategy or it's not, real concrete. But it's having gratitude and having an attitude of gratitude and being thankful. So tell us about how that's so important and, you know, maybe some examples of people that are super successful that still have this or that make this a major part of their mindset for success.
Yeah, that's absolutely a great one, man. And like you said, a lot of people will think that, you know what, I don't need to have gratitude. I don't need to have this attitude of being thankful, you know, because my hard work got me here. Well, you know what? That's great. That's awesome. But you know what? The world owes you nothing. I mean, literally, the world owes us nothing. And I am super grateful that a foreign kid like me, at the age of 6, my dad decided to defect from a communist country, come to America, so that a foreign kid like me could have the opportunity that I would have never had living in a communist country. You talk about, you know, the ultimate gratitude and being thankful. Oh, my gosh. In 1980 and 1981, I literally, as a kid who was 7, 8 years old, was a professional dumpster diver. And what my mom and dad would do, we'd go behind, at the time it was called Alpha Beta, it was a supermarket chain, and these stores would throw away food that had expired, like bread and milk, et cetera, and maybe like, let's say, vegetables and fruit. They were kind of bruised, but not necessarily gone bad. They just weren't sellable. And I'm pretty sure they didn't donate it to food banks or anything because maybe some liability issue. But my dad would give me a boost into the dumpster, and I knew exactly what to look for. The bread wasn't moldy. It was just expired, so they couldn't sell it. But, today, thankfully, my kids never have to see the inside of a daycare. I lived with latch and key. Like, literally, I was a latchkey kid. My parents worked till like, 8 p.m., and I would come from school, take the shoelace off my string that had the key on it, open up the apartment door, and I'd sit there and watch cartoons until my parents got home. Like, one of the key things for me was that, you know, my kids will never have to dumpster dive. I know it sounds ridiculous to even say that, because, like, well, why would you have to do that? Because I had to do that. I had to do that. And I had to do that to get the food out so my mom and dad could cook it up. And I stayed alone as a child in our apartment until 7, 8 o'clock at night. My kids will never have to see the inside of a daycare because I knew from a young age I didn't want my wife to work. She could do whatever she wants, but I wanted to find a woman who was like, hey, I just want to, like, raise an awesome family. I want to be around my kids. I don't want my kids to see the inside of a daycare because, for me, once my parents were able to afford a daycare, bless their heart, they put me in one. And it's not their fault. I mean, gosh, we were in need of money. But if you don't have that attitude that of being thankful, man, if you don't have that attitude of gratitude, as they say, no good. No good at all, because you begin to get cocky and arrogant and think that the world owes you something, and the world owes you nothing, man. It really does. The world owes us nothing. Whatever we get, we end up leaving anyway. And, you know, whenever we end up dying, we just die with whatever we have, the clothes on our back, and that's it. We're not taking it with us. So ask yourself, how can I repurpose this? How can I be thankful? And, you know, in my case, I have a soft spot for kids. And so we're one of the biggest contributors to Shriners Children's Hospital, the hospital that cares for kids who are burn victims, need palate reconstruction, have disabilities and need wheelchairs and their families can't afford it. To me, that's a big thing. I'm so grateful that we can donate to Shriners. I'm so grateful that we've been able to adopt now 6 or 7 kids through Compassion International. Why? Because as a kid, I had it rough. I didn't have the worst childhood in life. I had it pretty rough. So I got a soft spot for kids, and I'm grateful. I'll always look back on that and go, you know what? I'm so thankful for the life I have today. Because I could be the guy at the gas station pumping gas with no future and wondering what the hell happened to me. Make sense?
Totally does, man. Totally does. And it's just so simple, you know, a couple minutes a day just to have the gratitude, to give the gratitude and be thankful. And it really comes through in all those other universal truths that you mentioned. You know, a person that's going to be grateful is going to have a vision. They're going to care deeply. It's going to just reflect in all of that stuff. And, you know, if you're probably not going to be grateful, you're probably not going to have all those universal truths, and you probably aren't going to be successful if you refuse to be grateful for it. So that covers my list. Now, is there a couple of bonus ones that you wanted to throw in there, or have we pretty much gone through everything that you believe is a truthful component of success?
Well, I'll tell you this. There's two other things that really come to mind, and one of them is from Dan Kennedy, and one of them is something I learned from Dan Kennedy, and the other is from Kevin Nations. And the thing I learned from Dan Kennedy, and I know you know this, is success comes in chaos. In other words, success really is attracted. Money is attracted to movement. Whether you define success as freedom of lifestyle, of having money, and by the way, your association, your relationship with money has a lot to do with how you define success. To me, money is just a vehicle to freedom. That's it. it's just a vehicle to freedom. I'm not going to hoard it. I'm not going to think there's not enough of it to go around. I'll always find a way to get it because I always want the end result from it, which is freedom. And so if you realize that money comes in chaos, success comes in chaos, then you'll go out there and you'll take action, because when you take action, success comes to you. If you don't take an action and you're always pontificating and thinking about, you know, what's going to happen in life for you to get money, all the ducks you need to line up, and you're always thinking and planning but never doing, money eludes you. Money and success repel you, which leads to that second bonus thing from Kevin Nations, which is to take imperfect action, which I think is like the most brilliant thing I've ever heard, to take imperfect action. And for years, my whole mentality was, instead of ready, aim, shoot, it was ready, shoot, aim, which in other words was take imperfect action. I know what I want to do in life. I know the market that I want to serve, and I know the product that I want to put out there. I'm going to put out the best product I can as quickly as I can, and I will keep course correcting and making it better and serving the market space better, more efficiently, adding more value to it as I go. But if you're always waiting for it to be perfect, life's not perfect, man. Things come up. You know, I've got a trip this weekend, this Saturday. I'm leaving for the United Kingdom. However, my arm is in a cast as we speak this very minute. Why? Because I tore my bicep tendon and got it reattached last week. Now, we're going over there to UK to do a discovery day for Fit Body Bootcamp, which just pretty much means we're going to give a whole bunch of people the opportunity to come on board with Fit Body Bootcamp. Now, I promise you this. I'm a better teacher and instructor and just a better human when I have both arms to use. I just am. I travel better. I'm in a better disposition because my workouts are better. I can teach better. But I've only got one arm. So, one, I'm grateful about the fact that I've only got one arm, because I see people who come back from war and they have both arms missing, and I'm like, holy shit, I don't have a problem compared to what they're going on with. And two, I'm still going to take imperfect action. I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to travel the best I can. When I get to the UK, I'm going to teach the best I can. We're going to convert the most number of people that we can. We're going to add the most value to their lives that we can. And if another obstacle gets in the way, fine, we'll deal with it, right? Because we're just taking imperfect action. But if I waited for my arm to be better and postponed the trip, who knows what would happen next? Maybe another volcano strikes, and now they're, like, delaying flights for a month because, well, I've got a great arm, but, you know, there's volcanic clouds what did we have? Like, 2 months ago, we had volcanic clouds where people from the UK and Ireland weren't able to fly out to the U.S. for several weeks. So the point is, you've got to take imperfect action. You've got an idea. Act on it. When you act on it, success is attracted to action. Once you get a little bit of momentum and that inertia hits, you get motivated into doing more. When you get feedback from your customers, your clients, your patients, or whoever, and they tell you what a big impact that you've had on their life, you begin to add more value. So as you can see, just by taking one imperfect action, it's like a domino that sets off the chain to the other 11 factors that we just talked about. But the minute you wait for things to be perfect for you to take action, there's thousands of people who are waiting for you to create this one thing, but you choose not to bring it out, and you'll never add the value to their lives that they deserve.
It's very, very powerful words that you finished off with. I really think that a lot of people who are hesitant, who are kind of scared of, you know, taking the next step and bringing their product to market, you know, maybe they're worried about the criticism of their friends and family, or they're worried about the criticism of strangers on the internet, or the feedback from the customers. They might think that, oh, you know, it's not going to be perfect. Well, you have to remember that there's somebody out there who's hurting more than you, who needs your product, needs your solution. And if you can help somebody, you know, as our friend Frank Kern said, if you can help somebody and you don't, it's kind of bad karma on you, because, you know, that there's a lot of people out there who need some support, they need positive energy, or they need a solution to their problem. And if you can provide it, then, you know, it's a big thing and you should do that. So that is another very important aspect of success. And so I think you've really given us 12 amazing universal truths of successful people. And I think that if you translated this into Russian, you'd probably have people over there saying, yes, that's the 12 universal truths of success here in Russia too, and all around the world. And so I want to thank you for being on the call here. I really appreciate you, and I appreciate your advice, and I always am motivated and encouraged by the energy that you bring to these calls and your vision and your mission. So, Bedros, thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Craig. It was awesome.
And we are going to be doing an event in August in San Diego together, sharing our advice for trainers to help build their business. So all the trainers that are listening, we'll give you plenty of information on that. But for everyone else, if you want to learn more about Bedros, about his mission, about anything that he talked about how he helps people, you can visit his site at ptpower.com on the Internet. And then even just on Facebook, he's an awesome guy to connect with. So, again, thank you very much for being on the call. Bedros, any last things you want to say before we head off and before you get ready for your trip?
I think we covered it all, man. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, that's great. So, everyone, thank you for listening. This is Craig Valentine from TurbulenceTraining.com and InternetIndependence.com, wishing you success based on these universal truths. Bye-bye, everyone.